I'm Luke Kinetic with the McCain Institute, and you're in the arena with leaders and citizens who are taking character-based action. We're lucky enough to be in the arena with Thomas Klein Brockhoff. He runs the Berlin office of the German Marshall Fund, worked for the president of the Germany in the past, and a lot of other things that we may well get into. But we find ourselves at the Tbilisi conference, and you just came off a panel moderating about American foreign policy. I think we had a different name for it than that. So welcome to the podcast, and I guess let's just jump right in. Tell us about that panel. Tell us what you're doing in Tbilisi.
Well, this panel was titled Wither America. We had a Wither Europe panel, and this one was the Wither America. As a moderator, I tried to interpret it to look at the foreign policy outlook of the United States. Is it turning away from the international arena? Is it turning isolationist, as some people would have it? What is its future, midterm, and long-term perspective vis-a-vis Europe? How does it view multilateralism? Actually, what does it include in multilateralism going forward? Is this about working with others in alliances, or does this include larger bodies of global governance like the United Nations as well?
And you had experts, and then the panel's been taped, and folks can catch up to it. But this is a subject that you're not new to. You've been looking at this a while. In fact, I think you have a book coming out soon that is about this, and I'm sure more. So I want to hear what you think on this, and kind of how have you gotten to a place where this is an important part of your professional life, certainly.
My book coming out is the title is The World Needs the West, A New Start for a Liberal Order, unfortunately only in German at this stage. And my starting point is that we're in an age, in an era of fatalism. We're thinking all the things we build are now falling apart. Especially where I come from, a lot of people believe that the international liberal order is toast, that the West is over, that America is lost, that we're going into a populist nationalist age, and that is for a long time to come. My argument is that is not necessarily the case, because neither of these institutions, I think America is lost, nor do I believe that the West is over, nor, even though I see sort of signs of weakening of it, the liberal order is over. But we need to adjust to a new era, and I'm making some arguments about that.
Kind of, if I understand right, kind of meeting the world differently, but recognizing that the last six or seven decades can still guide us and have a lot to offer. And I've heard you talk a little bit about the year 1989 in particular. Does that have significance?
It sure does. I think we entered into misconceptions, into a Western triumphalism. We first brutalized the Fukuyama argument about the end of history and the beginning democratic peace, and then overextended in that we believed that everybody's going to want to become like us, and that would include the North Vietnamese, the Vietnamese and the Chinese and the Russians and everybody else. For us as Germans, that was a beautiful moment, because for the first time, Germany seemed to be on the right side of history rather than being a leader on the wrong side of history. But it also led to a mindset that we believed that the inevitable outcome of history would have to be administered. Now we find ourselves in a position that you actually have to work for, that is not enough to be part of the West, but that you have to produce West, and that is more than just being part of it. And you have to do so during a time of challenges, when even some of your own populations in the West are in the midst of a crisis of confidence. But I just happen to believe that while our institutions are questioned by some of them are weak, our basic values are uncontested. uncontested because the transatlantic the values of the transatlantic revolutions of 1776 and 1789 in France, and you might argue the first Polish constitution in 1791. Those are the Enlightenment values translated into the political world. That I think the ideals are still valid. If people asked, is the West withering, as we did on this panel, I would say you just ask the people of Hong Kong who were singing from Les Miserables, from the French Revolutionary period in Hong Kong. You just ask these people who are trying to get into Europe from the Middle East and Africa. They're not going to affluent authoritarian places like Saudi Arabia or the Gulf States or Singapore. They're wanting to go to Europe and to the United States because I think these people understand what the values of the West are, and that's why they want to be there, except that we have a crisis of confidence about our own world. That is something that we need to deal with, and here in Georgia, that impression is especially stark. When we don't live up to our values in our Western societies, then we don't set an example. If we don't show what's normal in democratic civil conduct, then it will have a domino effect into new or weak democracies like Georgia certainly is one.
So, you know, I'm biased. I'm working at the McCain Institute, which co-sponsors the Tbilisi Conference, the fifth annual international one. And, you know, I think anybody looked at it could recognize that we've had a strong 2 days of conference. But for me, you were among the delegation that went to the occupation line in Georgia. To me, that's what kind of brings things home. Can one kind of help the other? To me, when you have an understanding of what's in play right here that you can see in front of you if you come and visit as a way to kind of galvanize what we should be doing in the West or in democracies.
For me, this is my first visit to Georgia. Over those last 20 years of contestation of borders and conflict with Russia, I have never been here. So for me, the impression was especially stark to see that demarcation line that is an occupation line, to see that Russian flag of an SFB basis, and hear the stories of the first of all the illegal occupation in the first place, but then the salami tactics of enlarging that territory, of abusing the rights of citizens, of not allowing them to cross a line that isn't an international border in the first place, that is illegal in the first place. So the stories and the views that you have standing right there are especially stark if you've never seen them. And it also tells you something. We're living in these happy places. I live in Berlin, has about 300 lakes around them. We have a great recreational landscape out there, and we deal with our domestic problems. Yes, there are some, but we tend to forget that there are more existential problems than our domestic ones, and what our next weekend is going to look like in a country that has full employment that has growing wages. So I think this drives home an important point about why we need to, first of all, not turn away and take a keen interest in what is going on here, and then lend a helping hand, be exemplary in our own conduct, which I would argue we are not in the West at this point, vis-a-vis our friends in Georgia.
So to me, it's clear you're set and very good at getting across a perspective, a historical perspective, an actionable perspective. What other ways? I mean, talk about what other kind of opportunities and problems that you're wrestling with as a leader.
Now, of course, I'm concerned but not hopeless about our current world situation. I find it, especially as an individual, we're living in. I've been fortunate to grow up in and as a political being in the post 1989 world, and a world of affluence, of growth, of opportunity. Globalization for middle class citizens like myself had great opportunities. I was able to live, work in the United States, other countries, back home in Berlin. But I realized that that is in stark contrast to what other people, and I don't have to go far, I just have to go outside of the city limits of Berlin, are actually facing, and they look at this world not as one of opportunity. But I think we're having a number of structural issues in our Western societies that we haven't found a way to grapple with. And when I just look at my own habitat, so to say, in Berlin, I think the urban-rural divide and the political cultures that are polarizing and that are building the polarization of values and preferences between anything that is inside that urban perimeter of Berlin and anything outside are getting starker by the day. I can see that in most of Germany. I can see that in France, in Britain, in Poland, in the United States. There are structural reasons for that. There is depopulation. There is fertility rates in rural areas are down when they used to be up and supply cities with domestic migration, so to say. So we haven't found a way to deal with these structural issues of the inequality of opportunity in our countries that satisfies people. While I see a world of opportunity, they don't, and they think I'm part of the culprit of that, which of course I don't see. Now, that is part of a gap that we need to bridge, and it is part of closing or of rebuilding the consensus about basic things in our society. So there is a globalization critique, there is an urbanization element to that, there's a fracturing of our societies that I'm seeing. That has consequences for our trade and our migration agendas, and I don't see our solutions quite yet. I think what we have understood in our Western societies that our populations are asking questions. I think the populists, whether they right-wing or left-wing, are asking questions that are serious, although in my view they're giving the wrong answers to the right questions. Therefore, one needs to seize the agenda and answer legitimate concerns of citizens in Western countries in order to rebuild and to forge a new consensus that will allow us to have an internationalist outlook and work with each other on solving problems that otherwise you couldn't solve alone in our nation states.
So what I hear there is a real, you know, personally wanting to engage, and you are engaging, and not just for the sake of, you know, hey, I feel your pain, how can we really take on the, you said structural, the situations that you're in. I think the conversations I hear often will circle back to elected leadership. And I remember when I was in command, you'd look at the list of things that you need to do, and it'd be very long, but then you recognize that, well, but you were the commander who needed to do it. I think elected officials too often, or maybe it's more understandable than I realize, hey, I got to get elected again. I got to stay in power. I got to do what I got to do in the current environment right in front of me. So are there other ways? Does it all come down to elected officials? What are the things to aid structure other than elected officials? Or
I don't only think it's about elected officials. It's a cultural gap that is opening up in our societies. It is at the dinner table. I thought it was frightening in some ways when I read in magazines in the United States when I lived there, that there were articles on how to deal with your relatives at Thanksgiving dinner when you don't agree.
We put one of those out.
Yeah, congratulations. I think that's a sign of our times, and it's a concerning one, that at the dinner table or at the Thanksgiving table, we have the same, we're beginning to have the same thing in Germany. I find that concerning, that within families we don't have the civil space to disagree, even on major issues. That is part of the crisis symptoms of our society. Now, I will say that democracy, and if you go back to the values of the Enlightenment, critical thinking and self-critique is part of the Enlightenment. And it's part of the democratic system. I know of no system that is so ably adapting and self-correcting. Democracy, I think, is a self-correcting mechanism. That is why I think we'll get through this. We will have a populist period, but we will have an answer to the question that people probably justly answer. And I don't believe this is an American problem, a German problem, a British or French problem. This is a common Western challenge that we face. I don't know who comes up with the first sort of translation into the political world with a political agenda that actually appeals, sells, and addresses some of the concerns. But I am sure that folks are working on this, and that is what sort of is next on the agenda, a workable plan of traditional liberal democratic actors in our Western society to address these issues.
Well, it'll probably sound like complete stray voltage, but I find myself talking about, you know, who could be the Johnny Cash of modern politics, you know, that just kind of cuts across and hits home in a way that...
Tell me when you found him.
Yeah, kind of a standing final question on in the arena. I will. I think we should keep looking. Advice to the next generation, and you know, not really just how to get ahead, although I think that's what a lot of people want to know. But you know, how to navigate and how to approach the world we have and the world we'd like to see.
The first thing is get engaged. I have a daughter who is 20 years old. There's a generational gap, as many generations have seen. She's blaming me for not acting on certain issues, that our generation screwed it up. Well, my first answer is don't complain, get engaged. That starts at the voting booth. We need to get the next generation take charge, take agency, be active. Don't allow them just to point fingers at us old guys. You guys have something to say and something to contribute. Don't complain, act. That would be my first. And the second one is we're looking at a generation who has grown up with the benefits of that system. My daughter grew up in the United States, is now a citizen of Germany, goes to school in the Netherlands, and is now spending a semester in South Korea. You know, to us of the previous generation, that's unthinkable. Yes, they might blame us for something that we haven't done, but certainly this generation has enabled the next generation a global outlook that was unthinkable before. So, I don't believe for one second that this next generation will want to give up the opportunities that come with the information age and the ease with which we transport ourselves from one continent to the other. I think, keep at it, next generation. Don't let anybody, including somebody of the older generation, take that away from you and build structures in which that is no longer possible.
Good advice indeed. Thomas, you're in the arena here with us, but you're going to stay in the arena, I can tell, and we look forward to tracking your progress and hope you'll come back and keep us updated here and there.
Thank you, sir.
This podcast is produced by Patrick McCann and Justin Kessler. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, tell your friends, or leave a review.